Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Monday, April 17th, 2017. A U.S. senator visiting former Unity State says he'll push to keep funding intact for South Sudan.
All of the equipment, all of the staff, and all of the food relief has to be delivered by air. And unless the conflict reduces and resolves, I think there will be greater and greater famine, hunger, and risks to human health and safety across the country.
And Raja officials say things are returning to normal after Friday's deadly attack.
The fight, especially within the town, it has caused a lot of havoc and it has terrified the civilians. We have lost 10 civilians in the crossfire. That's one. And the second aspect is the tune of the fight itself. That are terrified the civilians. That's why they evacuated and they took hide in the farms.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A top U.S. politician says South Sudanese leaders must address the worsening humanitarian situation in the country. Democratic Senator Christopher Coons calls South Sudan a worrying tragedy. Waki Simon Wudu traveled with the senator to Ganyel in the former Unity State and has this report for VOA from Juba.
A group of children welcome Democratic Party Senator Christopher Coons and his team to the rebel-controlled area of Ganyel, where hundreds of thousands of South Sudanese depend on help from aid agencies. It's the first visit to South Sudan for Senator Coons, who serves as the ranking Democrat on the House Subcommittee for African Affairs. Coons wants to familiarize himself with U.S.-funded projects aimed at combating hunger and health problems in the former Unity State. The senator from the small East Coast state of Delaware says he was shocked to learn that the entire population of Ganyel depends on humanitarian agencies for food.
It seems to me that as the conflict widens here in South Sudan, the risk of large-scale disaster, of famine, and of widespread hunger gets greater and greater. There are real logistical challenges to providing famine relief here in Unity State and throughout the country. The place we are right now, there are no roads, really, to get here. So all of the equipment, all of the staff, and all of the food relief has to be delivered by air. And unless the conflict reduces and resolves, I think there will be greater and greater famine, hunger, and risks to human health and safety across the country.
The U.S. lawmaker also visited a refugee camp in neighboring Uganda, which hosts tens of thousands of South Sudanese who fled the violence at home. Coons says he will brief other U.S. lawmakers about the critical importance of foreign aid funding in places like South Sudan when he returns home. U.S. President Donald Trump's proposed budget would slash foreign funding by three quarters, a move that would affect hundreds of thousands of South Sudanese dependent on U.S. aid for food and shelter. Coons plans to speak up for South Sudan in Congress.
I know that we will have to make stronger arguments for why particular U.N. missions and particular countries should remain a priority. South Sudan currently has the largest and most difficult refugee problem in the entire continent of 54 countries. There are millions of South Sudanese displaced within South Sudan and who have fled to Ethiopia, to DRC, and to Uganda. I think it should remain a priority, but there will be some difficult negotiations between Congress, where I serve, and the Trump administration.
Coons urged South Sudanese leaders to find workable solutions to the conflict, which is entering its fourth year. He says the international community is struggling to help 60 million refugees across the world, but he sees South Sudan as a country whose people are in dire need of assistance.
I am gravely worried that this conflict continues to expand and to deepen and to threaten the very health and safety of millions of South Sudanese. This is not a time to assume that the United States will always be present and will always provide support. I think that makes it an urgent time for the leaders of South Sudan to find a peaceful resolution to the widening violence and conflict of this country.
Panyajar County hosts nearly 200,000 people, including internally displaced persons who fled to the area from Mayendit and Eliar, two counties hit by famine. Most families in Panyajar are battling drought and insecurity. Michael Loth, coordinator of the Relief and Rehabilitation Commission in Panyajar, says nevertheless, families continue to seek refuge in Panyajar, where aid agencies are providing assistance.
The people who are coming from Southern Unity are facing harassment during the fighting there in Leir Mandit. So upon arrival here, there are a lot of challenges. Food shortages is a problem, water shortages, and adequate medical care in the area. The children who came with IDPs together are all minority.
Speaking in his native Nuer language, Panyajar County Commissioner John Tapp says he has one message he wants Senator Coons to deliver to the Trump administration. Tapp says the Obama administration was not serious about resolving the South Sudan conflict. He says even if the U.S. government continues to give millions of U.S. dollars for humanitarian aid, but there is no peace in the country, the money is useless. He wants the Trump administration to resolve the South Sudan problems once and for all by restoring peace so that people who fled to neighboring countries can finally return home. The U.S. government is the biggest donor to the South Sudanese people. Since the outbreak of the conflict in late 2013, the U.S. has contributed at least $1 billion toward humanitarian work in South Sudan. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
The governor of Lowell State, Rizik Zakaria Hassan, says calm has returned to his state and life is getting back to normal after heavy fighting in Raja Town on a Friday. The fighting terrorized local residents. Witnesses say many civilians were killed and thousands fled their homes. Nabil Biagio has more for VOA from Juba.
Governor Hassan told VOA Today in Raja, the capital of the newly created Lowell State, that his residence was targeted during the intense fighting on Friday.
They approached the town from three dimensions. One group who started the kickstart of the fight started with the state headquarters, where the governor is residing. The second group started in the garrison. Then the third group, that's the one which approached the area from the eastern part of Raja. These forces, they were estimated around one battalion. And the fight took almost around 1 hour and 20 minutes.
Governor Hassan says the attackers are loyal to former Vice President Riek Machar. Hassan believes that some of the rebel fighters had personal grudges against him. He says more than 50 rebel forces were killed during the fighting and others were repulsed by government troops. He says five government soldiers were killed. SPLA IO military spokesperson William Gatjas says his forces withdrew from Raja last night after controlling the town for 2 days. He claims 46 government soldiers were killed during the attack and six others were captured as prisoners of war.
This is a technical whistleblower because it was not our wish to attack the Raja towns, but we came after a long challenge for 3 days. The government were triggered to challenge our bases. That's why our forces managed to come and overrun Raja Town. It was not our intention to come directly to fight them.
Hassan says thousands of civilians fled Raja Town on Friday and took refuge on farms on the outskirts of town, while others sought shelter at a nearby church compound. Hassan says many other families crossed the border into Darfur.
The fight, especially within the town, it had caused a lot of havoc and it had terrified the civilians. Even we had lost 10 civilians in the crossfire. That's one. And the second aspect is the tune of the fight itself. That had terrified the civilians. That's why they evacuated and they took hide in the farms. They went out. Since yesterday, they are returning to the town. Even now, the markets are open.
Hassan says Raja Hospital was vandalized during the fighting.
What was being looted? The feeding. These the malnutrition a food for the children. So that is the one which is mostly looted. And it was not looted during the day. To our analysis, we thought that it would be the rebels or some of the civilians.
Gadjiath says their forces remain around Raja town to monitor the movement of government forces, but denies his forces looted civilian property.
We don't loot things because the whole area, these civilians around Raja, they are our people, they are our civilians. We don't even have property. But this is a very chance from the Australian IG forces. When we are fighting, then they have got a chance, then they have salute.
Lolly State Health Minister Mohammedin Abubakar says state authorities are assessing the damage caused by the fighting.
I'm still waiting for the report from my director general there. They should write about what happened there. The communication is very weak because the network is not going through. They don't have power there.
Raja town was also attacked by armed rebel groups last June. The town was overrun by rebel groups who managed to dislodge government forces. More than 50 people were killed in that attack, and 30 million South Sudanese pounds was looted from Ivory Bank. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Juba.
Six South Sudanese political opposition parties are accusing the international community of looking away as genocide unfolds in South Sudan. The SPLM in opposition, the SPLM-FD, the National Democratic Movement, the People's Democratic Movement, the National Salvation Front, and the National Movement for Change, founded by former Western Equatoria Governor Joseph Bangasi Bokosoro, signed a joint press release over the weekend highlighting their concerns. Bokosoro tells me their country's humanitarian crisis is being made worse by a conflict which the international community has chosen not to prioritize.
The magnitude of the problem is growing from bad to worse. And as a result, we have decided now to alert the world that is watching the genocide in South Sudan without any positive response to have a joint letter to alert the world and the international community to come to the aid of the South Sudanese people who are now being killed by their own government.
In the press release, it says that the government is, quote, trying to annihilate minority communities. Do you have evidence that the government is indeed trying to annihilate whole communities?
It is a given fact, and the world knows about that. The UN is on the ground. Some of the international community, they are on the ground. The victims who survive the genocide are existing, and they had been questioned. And based on Honorable UK Secretary for International Development and the warning already given by Adama Dieng, the Special Advisor on the Prevention of Genocide, all these are the evidences that there is genocide in South Sudan. You visit Pajok, you visit Wau, visit different villages in South Sudan, you will verify this fact.
With the warnings that Adama Dieng has put out, he has said that genocide is looming and has said that the country is at risk of falling into a Rwanda-like genocide, but he has not declared that a genocide is actually happening in South Sudan.
Warning is already leading to genocide. When you warn that this will happen and it is happening, and there are evidences of that, then it means there is something taking place.
But the government says that they are not killing civilians, that they're not targeting civilians, that these accusations are a media campaign.
In fact, that is the language of the government of the day. Different people who are not within the government should visit the villages to verify that. Even if you ask me today, if I commit a crime, even though you catch me stealing something from the house of somebody, and then you ask me, why are you stealing? I will still deny. But let a different person verify that. You will get the truth that really there is genocide in South Sudan.
That was Joseph Bangasi Bakasoro, former Western Equatoria State Governor and founder of the National Movement for Change. He was speaking to me earlier today from Rochester, Minnesota. You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America. Gogrial youths say the governor has instructed police to arrest dozens of youth and politicians who support Riek Machar. Find out what the Gogrial state spokesman has to say about that when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how effective is civil society in your country?
In my country, for example, Malawi, I may say they are not effective because they are only there to advance their ideologies. They are not there to help the fellow citizens. So they are not effective at all.
On a scale of 1 to 10, I would give them a 6 because not all human rights groups are active enough for me.
In my country, South Sudan, you find civil society in most cases, they are the one implementing other things to do with the peace agreement, dissemination of the peace agreement to various communities. And of course, they are also trying to advocate for the top leaders at least to recognize that there is need for peace in South Sudan.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. A group of youths from Gogrial State are accusing State Governor Gregory Dengkwach of ordering the arrest of dozens of youths, politicians, and traditional leaders without charging them in a court of law. The Gogrial State Information Minister dismissed the accusation, calling it a lie. Tito Justin reports for VOA from Juba.
The youth sent an open letter to Governor Deng and other Gogrial politicians on Saturday, accusing the governor of detaining and threatening to arrest all former constitutional post holders, youths and politicians loyal to former governor Abraham Gumakwach, a Gogrial youth who did not want to be identified for fear of state government retaliation, says many youths, Madut Akwipir, Mayak Wol, Bona Makuru Awet, Bull Madut Geng, and Marik Agim Boy, to name just a few, were detained on orders from the governor and were abused.
They were tortured seriously, and now they are severely suffering in the jail. He also have other 8 youth from Puk are also now in the jail, and 40 chief of Obagwok in the jail, plus Sigmawut is also in house arrest. You know, the number is very huge. You cannot tell exactly how many people, but he's arresting people even up to now.
The young man says he worries about the safety of the youth in detention. He accused Governor Deng of taking the law into his hands and wants President Salva Kiir to intervene.
We appeal to the president to rescue the people of Gogrial State, because now, as I mentioned, some youth who are now in the jail, and people are worried for the safety of those youth. Now, there is no other solution that we have as the youth of Gogrial State, because the government was there to protect the life and protect the properties. But now he's not protecting the life. Agwok is fighting on a daily basis with Apuk, and also he's extended that problem now even to Tuj and to Awanriyo.
Gogrial State Information Minister Arich Mayar Arich denies youths were detained. Arich says Governor Deng has never ordered any person be arrested in the state.
We have never detained anybody. This is a complete lie. It is a white lie, and it is a naked lie. We are not detaining anybody. As a government of Gugrel State, we are a government who is adhered to the rule of law of the state.
Arich says there have been isolated cases in which armed youths raided cattle. He says those youths are criminals and are not affiliated with any organized groups in the state. He says state authorities have beefed up security to protect civilians and their property.
Yes, there was clashes on the water point in a place called Inabab. Those youths, they come with the cattle, the other come with the cattle. Then they accuse each other of trying to raid the other side of the cattle. This is where they just shoot up their gun, and then they were dispersed by our security forces.
And Rich says the government has deployed intervention forces to counter any resumption of intercommunal fighting. Insecurity and arbitrary arrest of South Sudanese by national security agents has been rampant in South Sudan since fighting erupted in late 2013, which later spread across the country. Last month, the British-based rights group Amnesty International appealed to Kiir administration to release 28 men held without charge at South Sudan's National Security Service headquarters in Juba. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Juba.
Clearing agents at the Ugandan border town of Ilegu say despite assurances by the government of South Sudan to provide security along the Juba-Nyamale Highway, the volume of cargo heading to South Sudan has dropped significantly compared to the time before the fighting began nearly 4 years ago. Simon Peter Apiku has this report for VOA from Ilegu on the Uganda-South Sudan border.
Clearing agents say the number of trucks traveling to South Sudan has fallen because of continued attacks from gunmen along the Nimule-Juba road. Mansour Noor works for Spedak Interfreight, a clearing and forwarding company with offices at Elegu. He says only a handful of trucks cross into South Sudan each day, in contrast to the hundreds of trucks that used to arrive just a couple of years ago.
The numbers reduced. It has reduced really. Before 2013, URA customs would release around 300 trucks per day, roughly 300. But since the insurgents, it went dropping.
Geoffrey Odoki is with Elitranda Uganda Limited, another clearing agency. He says rampant insecurity along the Juba Road has scared away the business community in Uganda. Odoki says due to the renewed fighting in South Sudan, fewer truck drivers are willing to take chances on the Juba Road, and that means far fewer goods get delivered across the border.
I used to clear like from 15 trucks to 30 in a day, but nowadays I can stay even 2 days with killer one truck. Like today I've just handled one truck.
Solomon Okello owns the Transoceanic Clearing Agency. He says his company has been hit hard by the sharp drop in the number of trucks crossing into South Sudan.
Business is low and people don't all, they are fearing to go that side because it's very insecure. You risk going that side, either you come back or you don't come back. So your life is always at stake.
Noor says South Sudan's economic turmoil has also forced companies to fold up shop, causing businesses such as his to suffer.
We have been exporting things of a company called SSBL, that's South Sudan Beverages Company, which collapsed. The factory, I think something went wrong, which collapsed, and we lost that contract of exporting goods for them. We had a company called Dar Petroleum, would take a lot of their consignments, which is not the case these days.
Odoki says the economic crisis and hyperinflation in South Sudan has not only reduced the purchasing power of most South Sudanese, but it has also compelled people to purchase only essential goods. He says some exporters are now forced to re-export items that South Sudanese no longer consider a priority.
Like, example, last week I worked on motorcycle. They failed market in South Sudan. Now I had to clear them back to Angola.
In order to cut the losses to business owners, the government of Uganda came up with a proposal to construct an international market at the border town of Elegu. Noor says the idea was to have Ugandans unload all their goods at Elegu, from where South Sudanese businessmen and women could buy the goods and transport them the rest of the way to Juba. Noor says Ugandans embraced the proposal, but says so far not much has been done to implement the project.
It would help us, you know, help our people, risks of traveling, risks of exporting goods up to there. It would help a lot. It would also create, you know, it would also create employment for guys around here. It would increase, this place would develop. But this is something that has remained on the papers.
Clearing agents at Elegu say efforts by the South Sudan Army to escort trucks along the road to Juba is a good thing. But truck drivers say the military uses this as an excuse to extort money from truck drivers. Many drivers have said if they refuse to pay a so-called protection fee, they are forced to get out of the convoy. For VOA News, I'm Simon Peter Apiku in Kampala.
And that's our show for this Monday. We leave you with the song Pandachol Bor by Panchol Deng. We've been listening to Panchol Deng with the song Pandachol Bior. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. Thanks for being here. And we hope to meet you back here tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America.